Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is Colin Jones, former manager of the Church Blackjack team and currently the leader of BlackjackApprenticeship.com. We're here to discuss Colin's new book, 21st Century Card Counter, which is available now from Huntington Press, or at least within the next week or two. Colin Jones, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks for having me.
Let's spend a little time for the, although you've been on the show before, let's spend a little time addressing why you think you're qualified to write a book about blackjack.
Well, because Huntington Press was willing to put the book out, I guess.
Oh, that's a good answer.
I mean, I've...
And they gave my $100,000 advance.
No, I guess I thought I've spent years playing and spent years running teams, spent years training others, and I guess that made me feel like I was qualified.
Well, also, so the title is 21st Century Blackjack. What's new in the 21st century that wasn't around back when Arnold and Stanford and all those people wrote their blackjack books?
Well, that kind of gets at why did I feel like I should write this book? And there's, you know, a lot of very good books on blackjack and card counting. But there are kind of two things. One is a lot of people ask me, hey, what book should I read? And it always felt like it would come with some sort of caveat. You know, I started with professional blackjack, which is great, but it's
Stanford Wong.
Yeah. It's mostly the numbers, and man, it was a mess me figuring out my bet spreads just from that, because it talked about Kelly criterion, but you know, it wasn't enough to really know. And it didn't get into what I'd call the art of advantage player card counting. It gets into the skill of it. I loved Burning the Tables in Las Vegas. That came
Ian
out,
Anderson.
You know, maybe a year before I started playing. And I remember I was substitute teaching at the time, and I took the cover off. And so I'd, you know, the students would be doing their thing, and I'd be reading Burning the Tables in Las Vegas behind the teacher's desk. And it was great, but I would tell people, well, it's a good book, but I really don't recommend his cover strategy, The Ultimate Gambit. At this point, it's too expensive, you know, based on most of the games you find. So there are kind of all these caveats of like, well, this book's good, but, or this book's good. That was half of it, is like, well, what, you know, people have been asking me for 10 years, what book should I read? And start to think, well, what would I put in a book? The other is just friends saying like, oh, you should, you know, I'd tell some stupid story and they'd be like, oh, that's great. You should write a book, and just kind of have that in the back of my head. And then the final thing was my buddy David, who goes by Loud and Often. You guys have met him. And he was like, Colin, you know, I'll help you write a book if you help me publish one, because he's a great writer and great stories. And I said, that sounds like a fair deal. Help, you know, like, why don't I do this? And then I'll help you, you know, through whatever self-publisher, whatever it is, his stuff down the road.
So, I agree, like professional blackjack, it's a lot of numbers.
Yeah.
And your book is not so much about how to learn how to count. And like, I think really even to this day, one of the best books for that is Lawrence Revere's Playing Blackjack as a Business. Because it's got all these sort of test yourself charts on the basic strategy and the index numbers and stuff like that.
And pretty colors on the tables.
And I found those really helpful, right? The color coding the basic strategy charts I thought was a really great idea. I think it makes it easier to memorize. I always liked the books that had stories from people who were actually out playing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I really liked Ken Houston's book, Million Dollar Blackjack.
Yes.
And the other book that I recommend a lot is Rick Blaine's book, Blackjack Blueprint, because it had kind of both.
Mm.
But this book has a lot of stories in it, which I appreciated a lot,
you
know, because that's what I like reading. So
that might explain Gambling Wizards.
Yeah. Yes.
Great,
yeah, right.
Great stories. Yeah. I think I, you know, David said, well, write the book you want to write. And so I enjoy teaching. I didn't want to write my memoirs. I don't think, you know, there's people with, I think, more interesting stories or better writing than me. But I've got some stories I like sharing and I like teaching. So I thought, well, I'll put my favorite stories. I'll try to teach the things that I feel like would help people that is different about blackjack now compared to 20 years ago. And I'd put stories from my friends that, you know, I think are worth telling.
Well, on your friends, you had 10 or 15 different interviews in your book, with at least half of them have been guests on this show. So regular listeners to this show will recognize the name of Joe and Semi-Pro and Vagabond and a few others. So how did you choose to get help to put these stories in? Or what was your purpose there?
Yeah, there were, I think, two purposes. One was to kind of break it up between chapters of information, you know, rather than just be information. I thought, well, at the end of every, and there's some other book, I think on like leadership or something that I read that had these little like questions or something at the end. I was like, oh, that's fun. Kind of breaks up the mental part of reading the book by having something totally different. And so that was part of it. The other is to inspire people. Like, yeah, this is information, but these are people doing this, you know, this isn't a thing of the past. These are my friends that are currently, and some of these people I'd already interviewed for podcasts or whatever. So I was like, hey, you know, and I tried to do a different angle for each person, you know? So there's people that started with $1,000. There's other people that, you know, have done it at the highest limits. They're, female, advantage players and, you know, president of large companies that is enjoying getting kicked out of casinos, even though he doesn't need the money. Just different stories that people might enjoy about people successfully doing this.
One of my favorite poker books is a book called The Education of a Poker Player by Herbert O. Yardley. And I always thought
World War stories.
Yeah. If I ever was going to write a blackjack book, I thought it was a great kind of format, because what he would do is he had these just amazing stories of his life. He was a spy during World War II in China, but then at the end of each chapter, then there would be a section on teaching you how to play poker, which, you know, his poker playing was basically play tight, but but the book was so good because of the story. So
that's cool.
I think it was a good way to go. Makes the book very, very readable.
Oh, good.
Now, in your experience, for players who no longer play blackjack, what is the major reason why they quit?
I don't think there's one major reason why. I think there's a handful. I think some people get bored with it and they want to do something new or different or at a larger scale. I think other people get really worn out from the travel. I've got multiple friends now that have transitioned out of it because they're having family, you know, and for me, that was a big reason why I played a lot less in the last 10 years. I've been having lots of kids and all that stuff.
Six, folks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Never gives his wife a rest.
We're done. We've been done for a few years now, but thanks for that. And then some people, the variance just, you know, eats at them. Other people, it's the back offs, you know, it's like you can start out with thick skin and it becomes not worth the effort anymore. So I don't think there's one thing, but I think those are the big ones.
Yeah. The having some family members saying, why don't you do something constructive with your life? You're so bright. Why are you wasting it on just this little thing of beating a casino?
Yeah.
And you keep getting that.
You know, I mean, even for myself, a lot of people are like, well, if you can beat blackjack, why do you run a website? You know, that kind of this, like, it must not really work, or you must not really be that good at playing. And, you know, okay, you can think that if you want. For me, I felt like once I'd done it for a bit, I kind of wanted to do something else, and then ran teams for a number of years. And then that started at some point feeling like a grind. And then, you know, we had this website idea and that felt like uncharted territory, you know? And then when that gets old, you know, I kind of feel like playing more or go back to that or whatever it is. But, you know, some people don't want to just do the same thing year after year.
I've had that same discussion online of, you know, if you were so good, you wouldn't be writing for other people because you wouldn't need the money and stuff. And I'm going,
That's always cracked me up. People who think you make a lot of money from writing writing books or articles or, you know.
And so I came up with the example of Aaron Rodgers, who happens to be arguably the best quarterback around, making good money from the Green Bay Packers, does these commercials for State Farm. Like, he cannot need the money.
Yeah. If you're so good at football, Aaron, why do you got to do these commercials?
Yeah, Dumfries does commercials. And so when I came up with that argument, and you go, it is sure arrogant comparing yourself to these star quarterbacks. I'm going, okay, I'm not going to win this argument.
No, you're not.
All right. I consider myself to be a gambler, and I only play when I have the edge, and I work hard to improve my craft. Some players in approximately the same position, including some in your book, consider themselves not being gamblers. They're kind of an applied mathematical practitioner of sorts. Do you consider yourself to be a gambler? Why or why not?
That's not the language I've historically used. And I think it goes back to my, you know, when me and, you know, a couple of friends first got into it. And, you know, coming from a religious background, there's this like this thought of, oh, well, you're gambling and gambling's wrong. And it'd be like, well, hold on. I remember Ben, who I first got into it with, had some, you know, it was like difficult questions for young Christians or something. and it was like, and it had a chapter on gambling. And he's, oh, you know, gambling is wrong and foolish. They never defined gambling. They never gave it a definition. And so, you know, when our friends or family would say like, oh, you know, you're gambling. Well, let's define what that is. And you know, so we would say, well, let's define investing, you know, calculated edge, expected positive return. And it was like, you know, if you feel like gambling's wrong, well, then don't call me a gambler, you know. And that was one of the ways we kind of helped people even think about, well, what is advantage play? Because everyone, you're in a casino, therefore it's gambling. And it's like, well, is it, you know, is it really or how, let's define at least what it is.
That's an interesting approach. Anybody who thinks gambling is wrong, it is their problem.
So well, it is. You know. Actually, I remember when I interviewed Keith Taft, who was very, very religious, and I asked him, how do you square that, you know, with your religion? And his answer was, there's nothing in the Bible that says gambling's wrong.
Yeah.
So, you know.
There's casting lots in the Bible, which is basically like rolling dice, you know, to make decisions. And that's, you know, it's just a part of the kind of religious worldview or whatever.
All right. We're taping this a day after you finished a blackjack boot camp, of which you've had dozens. What is a blackjack boot camp and who can benefit from them?
Yeah. So these are a two-day hands-on training. I'd say 90% of it's card counting training. And, you know, kind of the goal is to help people that want to master card counting to really progress both in their skill level and in their knowledge base. So, you know, I know when I tried to train myself and I thought I was pretty good, then I had my friend Ben deal to me and completely destroyed me, you know, and I'd been playing 25 hours a week, really just kind of breaking even for a month or two and probably 2 months, you know, just kind of breaking even. He dealt to me and I made, you know, he would add up my hand wrong and I wouldn't notice. He'd mispay me and I wouldn't notice. I got off on the count. I misbet. And it was humiliating and it was the best thing that ever happened to me. And what was interesting is he'd actually been trained, I shouldn't say the name, but a large national blackjack team. And I know he didn't pass his first several tests with them. So there's kind of this, we had found, you know, running blackjack teams, people don't know what they don't know. So getting that hands-on dealing is part of it, but also the knowledge base, the things that I'm not going to put, you know, in a video course or getting those questions answered. And we always have guests like, you know, some of the people that are interviewed in the book or you have been on Gambling with an Edge. And sometimes we get special guests like Tommy Highlander yesterday. John Chang came by and spoke for half an hour.
Andy Block's been there.
Yes, yes.
Russell Fox was in there for some tax advice.
Anthony Curtis. I don't know if she wants her name, but someone that ran a large team came by and told stories. So that's always like really.
We called her Thea when she was on this show.
Mm-hmm. So that's what it is. Who does it benefit? I think someone that wants to, I mean, someone that wants to take it seriously enough that it's worth the investment. You know, it's not cheap. We have, for the people that put the time and energy in, it's been a good resource for them and good networking and all that.
Who is JC Rocks?
Yeah. So we were just talking before we started recording. I think you called me a boring married man or something like that. You say like any good stories. I was like, well, yeah, you're not too wrong about that. As far as the last, you know, few years, I haven't played a lot, but, I was saying that I just got done recording a podcast, you know, for Blackjack Apprenticeship podcast with a guy that goes by JC Rocks. And he came to a boot camp a little over 2 years ago, and he'd clearly worked on his game. So we do an evaluation, a test out, basically. And I'd say 10% of people pass it, like not very many. And a lot of people are close and a few people are very far away. But he nailed his test out. You know, clearly had the skills and we've kept in touch. And I just interviewed him because 2 months ago, he got backed off from a place that he'd been playing locally that he took combined about $250,000 from his local casino. He said he could walk there a couple miles away. And it's just a great story. 150 of it from card counting, the rest from some other stuff.
To take 250 out of one casino, especially a local casino where you're there all the time, that's a pretty amazing accomplishment.
And maybe not a smart accomplishment.
You still want to make the money, though. I mean,
yeah.
You know.
But you're burned there, and he was playing rated or unrated?
Playing rated, yeah. So
now they have his picture and his name and his address.
And he has their $250,000.
Yeah, right. I mean, you're not going to take 250 out of many casinos in the United States.
Yeah. So one of the things that was fun about this is that a few years ago, me and Joe, that's been on your show, had this discussion of like, the days of taking six figures from a casino are over, is what we'd concluded maybe 3 years ago. And I talked to three people today. Joe's one of them that since he and I had that conclusion, he's taken $100,000 from a casino. And, obviously JC Rocks and another guy that I was talking to today was like, oh yeah, I took 140 from them. And I was like, that's incredible. Let me interview you about it. It's actually someone you've interviewed.
I mean, a lot of that has to do with how high their limits are. Right. So if you can bet 5,000, it's easier to take six figures than if you can only bet 500.
When this was 500 that wow. This guy did it from, you know, just he had the skills, but he also put a lot of thought and energy into his approach of not banking too large of. You can listen. The podcast should be on iTunes by the time this comes out, but he didn't bank too large of wins. He let himself bank some large losses. He didn't cash out too much at any given time. And he stuck with the shift that was comfortable with him. And he was just a local that's in a few days a week. And, you know, just so, not every.
I mean, the other thing that's really important is hiding, especially if you're on a card, is hiding the amount that you win.
Yes.
And generating losses, phantom losses, so that your overall lifetime win in their mind doesn't get too high.
So they knew what he'd won from the blackjack tables, 150,000, you know.
Accurate? They were accurate?
They were accurate.
Yeah,
So he didn't know about rat holing? That's not something you teach in your boot camp?
Well, it's something we talk about, but he, like
but
I said,
a skill.
He wouldn't cash out too much at a time, but he was playing rated and they knew the purple he was taking from the table or whatever it was. And yeah, maybe he could have lasted. I don't even think it was the amount. I think it was that someone did an evaluation when everyone else had written him off. And, you know, so it's a remarkable story. I'm not saying every card counter is going to do that, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah. The first question I asked, which we never really got to, was how is card counting different in the 21st century?
Yeah.
And what struck me is it always used to be you wanted to not get known, not get recognized, keep a low profile. But the approach of all these guys in your book seems to be put it in their face until they throw you out. And it's been remarkably successful with that kind of strategy.
I'd say the people that have made the most money, that's what they've done. And they're okay with the fact that they're going to have a lot of backoffs. They're going to travel, but they're going to really just go after the money, you know, and that's really been Tommy Hyland's approach for decades. Yeah. And, you know, these guys inspire me, you know, because that was the way we played back in the day. But then I hear people, you know, say, oh, it's not what it was when you played. And I don't play much, you know, like maybe 100 hours in the last year or so. But these guys are just doing it and they're proving it can be beaten. And I'm sure there are some things that were really nice in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s that doesn't exist. There are countermeasures that make things more frustrating. But to say it can't be done, like these guys are proving otherwise. And I think the aggressiveness is pretty necessary.
Yeah, I thought there was a really great story in the book, and it might have been you, where you were in like Wisconsin or somewhere, and you basically backed yourself off.
Yes.
Right? That was yes. You, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Why don't you tell that story?
So we did this a couple places, but the Wisconsin was the most dramatic. Another place was like a 6-hour drive. But what happened is we started getting heat. We'd been playing for 2 days with spotters, and I was the big player. And day one was great. Day two, it was going well other than we were losing. And then, you know, I get called into a table and some, you know, it was like the shift change had happened and some new guy, he comes and he starts thumbing through the cards in the discard tray and we're all panicking, you know, like, oh, we're done here, you know, and we made some sort of, you know, team decision. Let's get out of here before we get backed off. And so we, you know, we go and we kill like half a day in our dumpy hotel room and then fly home. And then it was like, are we really going to buy airfare back to Milwaukee to give it another try? As opposed to what if we would have said, well, we're getting heat, you know, let's just play till they back us off and see what, you know, see how much EV we can get before we get backed off. Well, we found out maybe 3 or 4 years later, found out actually, I think from Tommy Hyland's son, he's like, oh, that place. Yeah. Back then they would let you play till you'd won 100,000 before they would back you off. And it was like, you know, I died inside that we'd have left a place we were down at. And could have just continued to play all night, maybe extended our trip several days.
Yeah, big danger backing yourself off.
Yes.
It's something that...
Yeah, well, I'll have something to continue your thought.
But well, I was just going to say, we do that often if what we're doing is something we don't want them to figure out what it is we're doing.
Yes.
Then you have good reason to not back yourself off, but to end the play early because you can go back because they don't understand what was going on.
Yeah.
But if it is something like card counting, you might as well just push through it because sometimes they just let you stay and play. And also, I've also found that the majority of the time, a guy who thumbs through the discards doesn't really know what he's doing. He's just doing it to see if you react.
Which we did. So that reminds me of before you said, well, hold it for the show. But this ties into the story in Arizona. We were playing. It was our second trip to some casinos in Arizona. And we'd been there, I think, 4 days. And we show up, you know, day four, we show up at these casinos. It's kind of split up. We're just spreading large bet spreads. And there's our pictures, the four of us on papers in every pit, you know, our four pictures printed out. And it was like, oh, great. You know, we're flyered. But it was day four of our trip. It was our second trip there. We knew we weren't going to come back anytime soon. And so we, you know, decided we maybe learned from that previous experience, said, well, let's just play and see what happens. And they would huddle in the pit and be whispering and did nothing. And we continued to play. We beat those two casinos for 80,000 over this 4-day trip, and they didn't back us off until we cashed out 140,000 in chips. You know, we had bought in 60,000, went to cash 140, and they were like, "Who are you? What the hell are you doing?" And you know, and we got the back off at that point. But I'm so glad we kept playing. We probably won an extra 20 or 30 grand by playing through the heat.
Yeah.
A comment I wanted to make on this is my background's in video poker, which has different parameters. But sometimes some of the casinos I play at have regular drawings. And so if I'm playing for bigger stakes than most of the other customers, so I'm going to have more tickets in the barrel than most. So I'm going to win more than an average number of drawings. If I have won two in, say, 3 months, I will back myself off from the drawings for 6 months or so. Simply, I will, if the casino is worth playing at otherwise, fine, but I will not be part of the drawing. Because what happens is the other customers will complain to management that that guy, that handsome guy with the silver hair, that guy is winning all of the drawings. And so I don't have a chance, and it's totally unfair. And the casino will do something about it that I'm not going to like. So.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, yeah.
And that's like taking a break from a casino when you've won a lot. You know, if I remember the most heat I got, there was a local casino I beat for $150,000 over the course of like 3 years. And the most heat I ever got was after a really, you know, whatever, like a $30,000 win. The next time I showed up, phones are ringing and they didn't back me off because that wasn't their policy back then. But they would have made the cut worse, all that. So I just stayed away for a month or so, came back, heat had cooled down. That's one thing. I think if you're on, basically what I say in the book is if you're on a trip and there's not a good chance you're going to be back anytime soon, you got to weigh, well, okay, let's say I leave and let the heat die down. Am I really going to fly back and like hope that the heat, you know, that I don't just get backed off when I show up, you know, next time? And if it's across the country, you're not going to, probably not going to fly back.
Yeah. I've had a couple of situations where, like, I had one situation where we had a big win in a place, but we had set a length of time for the trip. So we left and we thought like they didn't back us off, but we'd won a large amount in a very small casino. And so I called up the guy that I had gone on the trip with, and it was maybe 6-8 months later. And he's like, you don't think we can go back there? And I said, well, look, just call him up, say you're thinking about coming back and that you want a room and, you know, a ride from the airport. Ask for as much as you can possibly think of, right? Because if they want to bar you, they'll tell you, no, you know, we're not doing all that. And sure enough, they were like, oh, yeah, we'll get you the room. It's all set up, blah, blah, blah. And, you know.
So you clearly were playing rated.
No. Actually, at this particular place, he had been CTR'd. This was maybe before the days of rating when you were out in the middle of the country. You know, they didn't have rating cards, maybe. But, yeah, in fact, this was a riverboat, and they had to put us up in a hotel off-site. They paid out of pocket to put us in a hotel. But I've had that on more than one occasion where we call the hotel, say we're coming back, and, you know, ask for the moon. And if they give it to you, you know it's okay. It's safe to go back and play.
How do they know who you are if you weren't playing rated?
He CTR'd.
So they had his name.
His name from the CTR.
Mm-hmm, good. That makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. Now, everybody's heard of Grace Jones. She's a beautiful, tall, Jamaican-born black model, singer, and actress. Right after the commercials, we're going to be asking Colin why Grace Jones makes such a big, important part of his book. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. Throughout the month, you play from Tuesday through Thursday and earn a logo merchandise. If you collect all four prizes on Saturday, September 31st, you will be awarded $100 in free play, collect it that day or lose it. The next 10-week semester of free video poker classes will begin the day after Labor Day, Tuesday, September 3rd, starting at noon. There's a flyers available at the club booth with a class schedule. Also may be found at bobdancer.com/seminars. All adults are welcome to attend. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is multi-strike poker. This is a game where you pay for four lines at the start, i.e. 20 coins. You play the first line. If you do not score anything, the game is over and you've lost the 20 coins. If you at least get your money back, you get to play the second line at double the amount for no additional coin in. When there, you play the 4x line. Win there, and you get the top line at 8x. Periodically, you receive a free ride before the draw, which moves you up to the next higher line, whether you score anything or not. A separate strategy is required for each line. The Video Poker for Winners software includes this game and the strategies required. On average, playing the multi-strike version of a game adds about 0.25% to the EV. Multi-strike, jacks are better, will be included in the upcoming semester at South Point. So, Colin Jones, how come Grace Jones is in your book?
Well, unfortunately for you, Bob, it's a different Grace Jones. My wife, her main name isn't Jones, but when we got married, her name changed to Grace Jones. And I used to send her, I would Google search Grace Jones and just send her random images of say, hey, I found you online, and it would actually be the Jamaican-born model and actress. But no, I trained my wife to be a guerrilla BP at one point when I was kind of burned at the good games in Vegas. Well, she had no interest in card counting when I got into it. No interest when I started running teams. But then we started having kids, and the thought of a paid vacation away from the kids, she was completely interested, not in learning card counting, but in, you know,
being, getting comps.
Yes, exactly. So I trained her as a guerrilla BP and kind of gave me, through her, a fresh life at some of the good games. She enjoyed the meals and the shows, and she won about $30,000 for, you know, before I think they put us together.
And they... eventually she got flyered.
Yeah.
So that clearly makes her a great player.
Yeah. They would back her off and trespass me. So that was kind of what they would do. But, you know, it was all well worth it.
Uh-huh. A few months ago, you created a video about understanding N0. How important concept of this is to the success? Boy, that was a sentence. How important is this concept to the successful player?
Yeah, I think it's important if you're going to try to be a professional card counter. If you're just looking to, you know, I kind of lump advantage players into different categories, the lowest being, you know, the hobbyist. And they want to feel like they're playing with an advantage. At the end of the day, whether they generate any positive EV is tough to say, maybe a little bit. Then there's a semi-pro that isn't going to quit their day job, but they're going to make, you know, profit each year on top of that. And then there's the professional. Well, if you're doing it professionally and you're living off savings while you're on the road, all that stuff, I think knowing, having a good idea of how big the long run is for a given game is helpful. And where this,
I think you should define NO.
Yes, for- yes. So where this came from is running the church team, which, you know, we had $1 million bankroll. We had, you know, 10 to 20 players on the team at any given time. There were certain games that were positive EV. But then when I started kind of digging more into it through like CVCX or whatever, it would say that the number of hours to overcome one standard deviation, it would say it was something like 800 hours. One standard deviation is kind of nothing. You know, to be within earshot of EV is going to take two standard deviations. And you can get that number by multiplying the N0 by 4. So we're talking 800 hours. It's going to take 3,000 hours to really be, you know, guaranteed.
That's only 5%.
Yeah.
Within 5%.
Yes. So, you know, I'm thinking our team's not going to play this garbage game for 3,000 hours. And so I said, hey, let's not play these games. So if I were going professionally, I would want to feel like every year I'm ending up in the positive. To do that, you know, if I'm going to play 1,000 hours, I'm going to keep my N0 at, you know, 250 hours or less. If I'm only going to play 500 hours a year, maybe I'm going to keep my N0 at 100, you know, 100, 150 hours because...
That might be hard to do, though, right? To find games where...
Yeah, that's going to be hard to do. I think keeping it under 250 isn't difficult if you've got a bankroll and you don't mind aggressive bet spreads. You can definitely keep it lower by playing double deck games or by wonging in aggressively. But there's just some games where the deck penetration and the rules, it's positive EV, but you're kind of gambling in the short term.
And you make a point several times in the book and on the air that it's not so much about winning money, it's about generating EV. So explain why you talk that funny way.
Yeah, I mean, when we started the church team, like the larger blackjack team, we were taking our friends that knew nothing about blackjack or you know, I'd never been in a casino till I'd read professional blackjack and, you know, spent some time practicing. But so we tried to create this kind of, okay, what is this? Okay, it's investing, not gambling in our definition. And how do we do that? Well, we generate expected value, positive EV. So, you know, I've been talking this way since those days, but you know, someone will email me and say, hey, your training's great. I took $1,000 and I made $5,000 with it. And I say, no, you didn't make $5,000. You won $5,000 and you're probably going to lose it back tonight, because if you went in with $1,000, you're overbetting, you know. So, you know, really to divorce ourselves from the short-term results and think in terms of the long run, think in terms of expectation. And yeah, I tried with this book to really lay that foundation, because there's a lot of gamblers that use card counting to negative EV players that know enough about card counting to fool themselves into thinking, you know, they're...
Yeah, and that is such a hard concept for people to get.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just really tough. And I get the same kind of things all the time. Oh, but I made $5,000 or whatever. But
yeah.
It's hard to explain it, and it's hard for them to understand it.
Yeah. Well, I've tried. I mean, I think I used some basketball illustrations of the expectation of a 3-point shot versus a 2-point shot and how that's changed the NBA, because they're thinking in terms of expectation and, you know, tried to help.
Yeah. Try to find real world outside the casino examples. But yeah, maybe pudding guy. That's
yes, a good yes. Yeah.
For listeners who don't understand the reference of pudding guy, you can just Google it in Wikipedia. He's got a Wikipedia page.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even you guys had Jeopardy James on recently, which was an awesome interview. Thank you for doing that. We're DVRing his Jeopardy shows. But he thought in terms of EV on the show. You know, he said, how am I going to, and even, you know, talked about maximizing expected value. I love when people outside of, you know, casino games talk about maximizing expected value.
Yeah.
Football, you know, football's gotten into statistics a lot to maximize expected value. You know, pass play is more valuable than run play, all that stuff.
Now, for listeners to this show who are interested in getting 21st century card player, are you offering any special incentive for them to buy via your website?
Sure. And let me clarify, it's 21st century card counter. Richard, you said 21st century blackjack. There is a book out there called 21st century blackjack that promotes progressive betting.
Oh, God.
So don't accidentally buy that book. It's about 15 years old. But 21st century card counter. We didn't come up with a better title, so that's what we went with. So for right now, it's, as of today, it's in pre-sales, and I think it will be for a few more weeks. And I will keep this, because I'm on the show with you guys, I'll keep it open at least, you know, for a couple of weeks after that. But
okay, so at least till, say, September 10th.
Okay, I'll do that for Gambling with an Edge listeners, at least for them, if not for everyone. I'll just keep it open.
All right. So what's the nature of this deal?
Yeah. So I have it 21% off. Get it? 21%. I put together some bonuses. I was just trying to think of, well, when the book comes out, what would make it fun? And so did three roughly 30-minute video interviews with $1 million card counters. So Yoshi did it in a Yoshi costume, like Yoshi, the video game character. He said, well, I don't want to be shown. I said, I'll buy you this costume if you'll do this. And he said, sounds good. So, Joe did it in disguise. And then,
as in Joe and semi-pro?
Yes. Yeah. And then my buddy David, who is on the church team, he goes by Loud and Often. So these three video interviews with $1 million card counters. And then we put together a couple kind of like ebook bonuses. There's a kind of a guide to being a card counter in Vegas that people have been given really positive feedback on. There, people seem to like that. And some training guides. So I just kind of put these bundle of bonuses together for people that buy it through blackjackapprenticeship.com, or you can buy it through Las Vegas Advisor, you know, but you won't get the bonuses.
Yeah, don't get the bonuses. Yeah. So
that's why you got to buy it from me, and then I make like an extra $3. So
there you go.
Very good. Actually, for people looking to improve their blackjack counter skills, that seems to be a good deal. 21% off. Get it. Okay. You mentioned Joe and Semi-Pro. Now, I've visited the Blackjack Boot Camp more than once, and they're always there. You have, like, training people. You have
they're stalkers.
Five tables, blackjack tables, going, and so each table has, like, four
participants.
Participants, and so you have one of your pros dealing, and sometimes, depending on how many are there, other pros coming in and start asking them questions that they might, you know, hi, where are you from? You know, how come you're in town? And whatever normal kind of questions to see if it throws people off. So these extra pros are a clear part of the process. So you could not do this without them.
Oh, a boot camp?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'd be in trouble. You know, back in the day, me and David could pull it off because it would be, you know, 10 students or less. But yeah, it's become a kind of a immersive thing. And Joe and Semi-Pro and my buddy Spartan and David and, you know, other people helped me put it on. I think for them, it's more about giving back and the networking and the hangout than anything else. But yeah, they're a huge part of it.
Actually, you mentioned the word networking, which I talk about often on the show. I think is just an enormous part of being successful in this business. Can you address that?
Sure. Yeah, I think there are two, I'll say three ways I've seen people use this to a big advantage. One is finding out what places not to play, or, you know, kind of how to approach different markets or different cities or different casinos. The second would be finding out things available that they wouldn't. So there's another guy, SD1. I've done a podcast with him, but he has made a lot of, he's made six figures. He's interviewed in the book. He's made six figures at card counting, like maybe 200,000. And he's made at least as much, if not more, at some other opportunities at casinos that he probably doesn't really want me talking about. But though he found out about it through people he met at a boot camp that said, hey, did you know there's this? And maybe, you know, they partner on it initially in a cut of the action, whatever. So making money off of opportunities that come through a network. And then the third is just like having people to call when you're bored or frustrated or lonely or any of those things, just having a support system. So I think all three of those are really important. And a boot camp's easier because it's in person. You know, it's hard to network with people that you're not meeting face to face, but you know, it happens.
Mm.
I'm not saying people have to drop $3,000 to network, but that's when I say networking at boot camp.
No, but I mean, there's also networking on the forums.
Yes.
And the Discord channel.
Yep.
And you know, but the value of establishing a network is cannot be underestimated.
Not at all. And you seemed like you have one of the most valuable networks of any AP I've met that people could just say, hey, there's this thing, or at least back when you were active.
Oh, I am retired.
Yes.
So
for the how many time?
Oh, you know, 6, 8. It's like quitting smoking. It's easy. I do it all the time.
Now, you mentioned $3,000. Is that the price of the boot camp?
Yeah, that's the price. Doesn't include hotel or airfare, but includes the training and food and whatnot when we're hanging out. Yeah.
And so what if you take the boot camp and you decide you got a lot of value out of it and you want to take it again a year later?
Yeah, well, for several years now, we've offered if people want to come back at they can come back at half price, because there are people that show up, realize their game's not what they thought it was. And then they're like, well, wow, that stinks, you know. And so we've said, well, come back even just for one day and, you know, you're not going to have to pay the full price again. That's a little bit dependent on how much space is available, because the last, I want to say, four completely filled up.
So if you can fill them up with $3,000 customers, that lowers your incentive to fill them up with $1,500, sort of. But still, you want to take care of your
Well, it's tough to tell someone you can't come because someone's coming for their second or third boot camp. You know, that's a little bit tough to say. And as far as the price, you know, I know it's steep, and I tell people I understand that that's a lot. That's a chunk of change. But it's I don't want it to be so much that I started with $2,000 as a card counter. So I want to see the little guy, like, they couldn't even afford a boot camp. I don't want to say, oh, well, it's full, so I'll jump it to $5,000. But there's also a little bit of, hey, if it's filling up, you know, I'm not going to lower the prices. So it's tough.
Well, also, to get good at blackjack, video poker, or any other thing, you got to be serious about this.
Yeah.
And it's different. If you're decided to invest $3,000, you've got to...
you're going
to
take it a lot more seriously than...
Yeah, for $150, it's like, oh, it's okay. It's, well...
There's a, you know, some people get annoyed that we charge, even for like the membership at Blackjack Apprenticeship. Well, if you've made so much money, why are you charging? And it's really more about gatekeeping. We used to have it for $19 a month. And just the massive turnaround of college kids that had $19 one month, you know, I was like, this guy should not be getting into card counting. You know, we had a massive turnaround every month. And so we changed it and we raised the price and made it annual. And we said, well, if you're serious about card counting, you're not going to learn it in a month. And, you know, you got to have not only a couple hundred bucks for the training, but also a bankroll, you know. So, yeah, there's a little bit of gatekeeping of you know, the price is too low. You're going to get a lot of people not very serious about it.
Before we let you go, we're soon going to have another Bob and Richard Answer Their Mailbag show or two. And one question comes to mind here. It was going to be on this, but since it's about blackjack, we're going to ask you, Colin, and let Richard answer it as well, if he wishes. And the question is, can deep penetration and a big spread overcome a 6-5 blackjack game? I bet you get that a lot.
Yes. There are beatable 6-5 games out there. It's got to have a lot going for it. I'll put it that way.
Can you explain what kind of things are you looking for?
Well, you mentioned a couple, a large bet spread, really good deck penetration, favorable rules, and a small number of decks, like one deck. Yeah.
You know, 6-5, when it first came out, was advertised as single deck.
Yeah.
We have single deck blackjack on the Las Vegas Strip. Bally's had a huge sign, you know. But it was 6-5. And, you know, there were a lot of people in the blackjack community who said, you know, this is terrible. This is the worst thing that ever happened. And you should never, ever play. And for a lot of professionals, it was a gold mine.
Yes.
Card counting is one of the more difficult ways to make money at 6-5. Mm-hmm. But there are certainly... 6-5 has been great for a lot of professionals, and not even just single deck, just in the beginning anyway, just they didn't sweat the game much. So if you were playing 6-5, they didn't really pay attention to you.
Yeah.
And now, you know, they may not understand how you're beating it, but it doesn't matter what you're playing anymore. Now, a lot of casinos... if you start to win a lot of money, they just throw you out anyway, even if you're playing craps. I mean, it doesn't matter anymore. So, 6-5 isn't as great as it once was, but.
And if you're straight counting, there's probably much better games, you know, like, yeah, technically, you know, I've come across some games. It's like, oh, I can make 100, 150 at this 6-5 game after I run the numbers, you know, not just follow my gut or whatever, but I can beat the 6-3-2 game, you know, across the pit or in the other casino for more, you know.
Yeah.
If you really think you're going to last a lot longer, then it could be a smart way to go. But yeah, technically beatable, not the best for card counting.
Another question that I'm not going to get to answer, Richard, on that show, because we're asking it now. Somebody found a game in Kansas that's called Dead Man's Hand Blackjack. Pays extra for aces and eights. Should be easily beatable, right? Have you heard of it?
I have not. What does that mean? It pays extra for aces and eights.
Presumably, I don't know. He didn't. This is all the whole question.
Like you end up with two pair with 16 and with wait, how
a pair
this,
of eights or a pair you, of aces? I don't know.
How would you get this hand? Or maybe you split eights and you get aces on the. I don't know.
There's some
I,
of them.
Anyway, it's I've not heard of it.
It could be the number of eights or aces that come out on the table. Here's the deal: you need more information. You need to analyze the game. I'm not going to tell people what to do to analyze it, but the people that are beating things like that, they've analyzed the games.
Yeah. And often, see, I didn't know about this question, or I would have looked at Wizard of Odds to see if he had it there, which a lot of times he does. And
clearly serves me right.
I get a lot of those emails, and the first thing I do is Google search it. Is has it been, you know, Wizard of Odds, Dead Man's Blackjack or Casino 888 or 888casinos.com, Dead Man Black, you know, see if Elliot Jacobson, if someone's analyzed it. The next is if you have someone that can analyze those things, but I haven't.
But the other thing I would say is if it involves how many aces and eights are left in the deck, then obviously that's countable. The problem is if it's a side bet, which often that seems to be the trend now, is they've got just dozens and dozens and dozens of side bets. Often the limits are so low that they're not really worth much.
Yep.
And our final question to Colin, should somebody want to get in touch with you, what's the best way for that?
Gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Send all questions there. No, I'm just kidding.
You can. You can send us your questions there too.
Yeah. I think email Colin@blackjackapprenticeship.com, or that's a long one, so you might misspell it. I don't know. Just go to Blackjack Apprenticeship and find the contact form or something. And I do. I reply to the emails that I get.
And your first flippant answer was actually reasonable.
Yeah.
We get a number of requests at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com of, can you put me in touch with
Vagabond,
such and such an author. And so what we will usually do is respond to that person with blind CCing, whoever they wanted to get in touch with.
That's
and
great.
And should the guests wish to follow up on it, they have the contact information. But you know, we can't guarantee who these people are or anything like that.
Yeah, you're not vouching for them.
So, very good. So, Colin, thank you. Good to have you back again.
Yeah.
We appreciate your support of the show and for having all these boot camp graduates who become guests
right,
on our
right.
show.
Right, send us your your guests.
Well, you know, thank you guys for what you do. It's a huge service to the Advantage Play community. So thank you guys for doing this show.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.